The Disney Renaissance is seen as one of the greatest eras in modern animation. But at the same time, on the other side of the world, Japan was taking the medium in ways that would make Walt Disney shit himself. That's right, today we're talking about some classic anime movies.
Good job, man.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. That, you know what?
Only two takes.
Questionable on the shitting part, but all right.
I think Walt Disney would shit himself if he saw any of the movies we were talking about today. Like, actively shit himself.
I mean, just the fact that there are Asians in there, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe that part.
Oh, God. Yeah, Walt Disney was kind of a racist. Yeah, that's something that, you know, the mouse wants you to forget. Walt Disney. Well, like, yeah, you know, this episode has nothing to do with Disney, but, you know, let's just take a quick shot.
I mean, let's be honest, Disney's still a little racist.
Yeah, a little racist.
Finn,
they butchered my boy in the
Star Wars.
The sequels. Like, I'm one of the rare people. I enjoy all Star Wars. I'm just gonna put that out there. Yeah. I actually do enjoy the sequels.
The only person.
Yeah,
I'm the only person on Earth who does not hate anything from Star Wars. You're right. And yet, I know they butchered Finn. They could have done a lot more interesting things with them, and that's my biggest probably problem with the sequels, which is not what we're talking about today at all.
Definitely not.
No.
Alrighty, welcome to episode 5.
Welcome to episode 5.
I'm Faison.
I'm Chris.
Oh, is that how we're introducing now?
Yes.
I'm Tyler.
So, now that we have a cold open and music, I'll let Tyler talk about that.
Yeah, we have music now, thanks to Pilot G. You can find him on SoundCloud with that name. Go check him out.
SoundCloud.com/PilotG.
I don't know anything about music.
Is there a dash in there?
I think it's just a slash. Well, no, there's no dash.
We probably should figure this one out before we
should. I'm literally looking
out.
At it. There's no
He's
dash.
He's going to plug it on Twitter, too, because
SoundCloud.com/PilotG. Yep, check him out for some nice, relaxing beats.
Oh, of course, this is a picture. Him upside down.
What? It's a classic...
I know.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, actually...
It wasn't an insult.
I really like the music that we have for the opening. I feel like it has a really good, like off kooky vibe type of thing, you know, just like a fun feel to it.
Yeah, it works.
I really like it. I really dig it. I'm really glad we tripled our production value by including music into the show.
True. We got editing. We got music.
I know. We're almost like
we
know.
We just need a studio band.
Yeah, I have been saying for so long, we need a live band. We need a live band for this show.
Or just a video to.
No. We need a live band. That way I can point at them and make cues and we could have a whole system going and
it'd
be so good.
Soundboard.
But we need both of those things. I think those things have to... No, I would rather have someone with a saxophone playing Careless Whisper than a button playing Careless Whisper any day of the week.
But you
and
need
I
to
just,
time it so
no,
well.
I
no,
just
you,
point
you know,
to him.
You know what
I
we
just
do?
Point to him, and he knows what to do.
I think that we each just need to learn an instrument.
That's not a bad idea. Okay. Who wants to learn saxophone? Tyler? Right.
Why are you looking at me?
I'll take saxophone.
Okay, Faison's doing sax.
Yeah.
I'll get a pair of drums.
Oh God,
Tyler has his Jewish hands. Oh no, wait, no, that's not what I meant. He has long fingers.
We're keeping it.
We have to. That came off a little worse than I meant.
We're keeping it.
He can play the piano.
Chris really likes Walt Disney.
No.
Yeah, a little too much maybe.
No, wait.
You know, on that note,
on that note, we're canceled. Goodbye, everybody.
I watched Borat. It's not my fault.
Let's start it up, I guess. On that note,
we got canceled already.
Oh God, I think you're starting.
Yeah, I am. All right. So the first movie, Akira, takes place in 2019. 31-ish years after Singularity, quote-unquote, blew up Japan. Basically a nuke.
Yeah.
Let's be honest here. And, you know, basically government rebuilt from scratch. Super corrupt. Gang violence, protests, you name it all. It's all there.
Yeah, pretty much. The movie starts off with... the kid escapes, right? And then they find him in the street, or no, am I missing?
Yeah, well, the first, like, one of these psychic test subject kids breaks out of a government facility.
The main characters are street racing.
Well, it's a gang war. It's not really a race. They're just beating the shit out of the clowns.
Yeah, basically.
It's a gang war.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, the world of Akira is a world spiraling out of control rapidly. Everything
I mean, it already spiraled out of control.
It is. Like, yeah, you're right. It already has spiraled out of control, but it is continuing to spiral horribly into its own destruction. Like, the streets are filled with gang wars. The government's completely corrupt. The city is torn apart by, like, the military and these shitty capitalists. Like, all of New Japan or Neo Tokyo is a fucking mess. That's pretty much the premise.
It's what would happen if the government needed to be rebuilt from like a natural disaster or some shit.
Yeah, if like you, if you pretty much reset everything and you push the government to have to make an entire new city on the bones of what was destroyed, you'd get Akira's vision of Japan.
Yeah,
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. I think we have to pretty much start it off by saying this is the most. Well, okay, no, actually, let's start it off by kind of saying how familiar each of us are to anime. Because Tyler, you have seen almost nothing except for maybe one or two things that I've pushed you to see outside of today.
If it, you didn't force it on me, I don't watch anime besides Ghibli.
There we go. Faison, you've definitely seen more.
Yeah, I'd say I'm pretty, like, I don't watch a lot of anime, but I've watched most of the bigger releases, like, you know, Attack on Titan, One Piece, Naruto, Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah, oh,
both God, of them.
Can't wait for that one to get on the
great
show.
Great shows. Great shows, I'd by like the way. Both of them are great.
Yeah.
A couple others that I can't really remember. Gurren Lagann.
Yeah.
We got a couple more somewhere there.
I watched a shit ton in high school.
Yeah.
I watched a
I know you guys
unhealthy. Yeah, me and a bunch of our other friends watched an unhealthy amount of it in high school. And then I kind of teetered off during college. And this is probably got to be some of the first anime I've watched. That's not true, actually. The first anime I've watched a complete. Nope, that's also not true.
Yeah, Chris, stop lying to yourself. Come on.
I did teeter off a bit. Because like I watched all of One Piece in like a couple of months, 3 months, 4 months.
Yeah,
that
true.
Was
I mean,
disgusting.
That's a binge.
That was disgusting. Yeah, that's something for the show. That was unhealthy.
Solid 900 episodes right now. I think.
Yeah,
I might be hitting 1,000 soon. Like,
I think they hit 1,000. I'm not sure.
Check.
Yeah, we could just do a quick fact check. But yeah, so we all have varying levels of familiarity with the medium. But it cannot be understated that this is probably the single most influential piece of Japanese animation that has ever existed.
Akira is, yeah.
Yeah, Akira. Akira is the single most influential piece of Japanese animation. It's probably, I would probably say it might be the most influential piece of animation. I might go
of
so
animation?
Far as, yeah, of animation. I might go so far as to make that as like a soft call. Because like I kind of want to say that Astro Boy is probably just as influential. And same thing with like the early Mickey Mouse cartoons.
Yeah, I mean like Akira is influential to everybody.
Yeah. Like,
even if you don't think about it, even like, I know Kanye has this and There Will Be Blood as his favorite movie.
Yeah.
He used it. He was influenced by it a lot during his graduation album and that whole era.
Doesn't one of his music videos have a direct reference to Akira? Or
yeah, Stronger.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So is like, it really?
I think he got the artist or one of the artists to do something similar with the graduation music video, but I know it's either the graduation video, no, not graduation video, Stronger music video or something during that time that he did something with it.
Okay.
And either way, I know Akira is his favorite movie.
Yeah, I've seen that
too.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, this movie's like, it's not just influential to anime. Like, it's influential everywhere. Like, this is one of the two movies that came out and defined what cyberpunk was as a genre. Like,
yep.
It's this and Blade Runner, and, like, those two things came out within the same year, and they pretty much collectively decided... Well, no, I'm sorry. The manga for Akira and the
came
movie...
Came out the same year.
Came out the same year as Blade Runner.
But Blade Runner was technically first.
Blade Runner
yeah,
was
yeah, I mean,
first.
And the writer even came out and said that Blade Runner was an inspiration
for
Akira.
Akira.
Yeah.
But, like, either way, like, these two movies, like, they defined what cinema saw cyberpunk to be, because there were definitely some books, I think, in the 70s... that were like speculative fiction that kind of touched on the cyberpunk as a genre. But these two really defined the visual and the aesthetic of what cyberpunk was going to be.
Yeah.
Not only in Japan, but also in the West. And in terms of like just anime inspirations, like pretty much fucking everything. Dragon Ball Z is very inspired by Akira. Neon Genesis Evangelion, which itself is probably the second most influential Japanese piece of animation out there.
Great show, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. We have to talk about it.
I have
it
to finish
point.
It soon.
It's very good. But yeah, like, it has its hands in all the pies.
Yeah.
Everywhere. Everything is somewhat inspired by Akira. It's fucking insane.
All right, do we want to get to talking about the actual show now?
Outside
of the
influential,
or movie, sorry. My bad. My apologies.
I think it's like, there's not a huge amount to summarize here. A member of a biker gang, Tetsuo, ends up developing incredibly powerful psychic abilities, gets captured
as
by
a
the
result
government.
From, like, the radiation from... that explosion
is it
or I not radiation
no
but
tests.
Like
didn't they do tests on him when they got him?
I think he just had latent psychic abilities that were awakened when he ran into the escape test subject.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh yeah. Really?
I think so. The okay. movie's a little bit vague about its name,
because a lot of the events that happen in the movie, the main characters just happen to walk in on, more or less. Like, it's not like they're actively going to, oh, we need to go see these test these kids that are getting tested on. It's like, no, we're in a battle on the streets with this gang. We found this kid, the military then grabbed us, and then just it goes from there.
Yeah, things kind of just happen in Neo-Tokyo. That's a fair way to look at it.
Yeah.
But yeah. He develops these latent abilities, gets captured by the government, breaks out from the government facility, and goes on a journey to find the supposed greatest psychic person that's ever existed, Akira.
Yep.
The man responsible for the basically nuclear blast that destroyed Tokyo.
Completely.
Yeah, completely, like 30 years
ago. The first time.
Yeah. Well, no, actually, I think it's the second time.
Is it?
I'm pretty sure there was a total of three singularities, but that might be in the manga, not the show. And not the movie.
Yeah, I think the movie only had one.
I think the movie
had the one at the beginning.
And the end.
And the end, yeah.
Yeah, I think it only had two.
But spoiler, that fucking city blows up.
Yeah, that's the finale.
Yeah.
I think it's the manga that had three, because one interesting thing about the production of this film is that some anime are based off of manga, right? And the director of this film is the same man who was writing and drawing the manga itself. However, the manga was being written during, before, and after the production of this film. So the manga inspired the movie, and then the movie inspired the manga. And the manga is like, it basically has a complete like change to the movie.
So the manga wasn't finished when the movie came out.
No, he was still writing it. And it changes, it changes drastically. Like, you get pretty much everything of the movie, except Akira does actually come out of that that capsule thing at the end. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like the pieces of Akira. It is Akira. And Tetsuo basically becomes like the Vader to his Palpatine, is a way I've seen put it. As Akira becomes like a king of the wasteland. But it does end the same way with like a singularity. So I think that's why there's three in the manga, if I'm not wrong. I've not actually read it. I've read part of it. I've never gotten around to finishing it. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a gorgeous film.
It is.
I think it's one of
the animation's extremely good.
Yeah, I think it's one of the first anime movies to ever be like done in like X amount of frames per second. I can't remember what it was, but it I think it was like every third of a second is a frame or something like that, is what I heard.
I got you real quick. Hold on.
Yeah, well, we'll fact check that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of iconic 24
FPS?
Maybe. That's what Google told us, so we're going to run with that.
Hmm. There's a lot of iconic shots. Like, everyone, like, even if you don't know it, there's in a ton of movies, the shot of a guy sliding on a bike.
Yeah.
It came from this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure even Ninja Turtles took
Everybody took
it. Most anime shot at 12 or even 8.
Yeah,
frames per
this is the first at 24 frames per second, which made it extremely expensive, which we'll get to in a few seconds. But yeah, I mean, it's a gorgeous movie. Neo-Tokyo looks fantastic.
Oh yeah,
the contrast between the blacks and the neons is fucking insane.
I wanted to say this was the best looking movie out of all of them, but it's hard to argue with another one.
Yeah, I don't know. That's tough to say.
Yeah. I think there is a better looking film. I think this film, I mean, they have this movie and the other one we're going to talk about have distinctly different aesthetics. This is such a
I guess
a
it depends
gritty
on what type of aesthetic you like more. Yeah.
This is such a gritty feel to it,
yeah,
you know, that like it makes those neon colors pop so heavily against like this like dusty, shitty kind of crappy
city.
A visually dark world. Another thing I want to talk about, I love the music. Like specifically I love the
music,
chant,
yeah,
the Akira kind of like it's like one part synth, one part old traditional like vocals.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that bit.
Yeah,
I absolutely love that music track. Like it's probably my favorite between everything we're going to talk about today. That individual track.
Thinking about that just makes me think about how to different ways we can rank all these movies, because there's so many different. They're all great movies.
Yeah,
they're all great movies and they're all different ways. The music, like, there's nothing really bad you can say about any of these movies.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I don't think so at all.
No,
there's no right answer on how to rank.
Well,
these.
Okay, I don't know about. It's not bad that this movie is cold. Like every time we talk about it, we describe it as a cold movie because just
bad things happen.
Bad
to
things happen to
there.
People, and it's not like, oh, this happened because he stole something. It's like
he just
happened to be at the wrong place at the wrong time.
And it's like graphic shit.
Oh yeah,
I mean, like Tetsuo's girlfriend pretty much dies because she wanted to make sure her boyfriend wasn't in a bad place. Like she gets crushed in a very fucked up death that she really didn't deserve.
No, definitely
nobody
not.
Any death in this movie is not deserved, really.
Well, there's that capitalist guy who gets a heart attack.
Yeah, fuck him.
Yeah.
Well, but
he died. He died like the best way, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
he died
like the nicest way in the movie.
Did he? I think that was a very painful way to go. Like, I feel like a lot of the ways other people go is kind of instantaneous. He was clearly
okay,
suffering,
but it was
the
least
the
gruesome
way.
One.
Least gruesome, yeah.
Yeah.
I like to think it was incredibly painful for him.
Probably. Oh, I mean, he's stumbling along the alleyway and trying to get his pillows out, but can't.
Yeah. He's the only person who deserved his death, really, in all of this. Everyone else is just unfortunately there.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the, like, it's not a negative, but that's one way to say the movie is just, like, that's the quote-unquote bad thing about the movie is just it's very cold.
Yeah, it's a bit cruel.
You don't, like, you get to know these characters, but at the same time, I didn't really connect to them.
Yeah, that's
there wasn't
fair.
Really much to connect to. Like, they didn't give much to connect to,
I don't think it was a movie for us as people to connect to.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think the characters really mattered in this movie. It was like
not
overall message.
So, yeah, well, I'd actually agree with that as well. Like, so I guess in terms of what this movie stems from, right? Like, it stems from post-World War II anxieties in Japan. So, like, you know, Japan was nuked during World War II by the U.S., and the singularity explosion that comes from Akira and Tetsuo is a very
Basically,
it's a very clear reference to nuclear bombs, right? And so much of this movie, like, when looked at under that lens, becomes really interesting. So, like, I feel like when I first, every time I've watched this movie, just watching it, my enjoyment of the film has been kind of, like, there, but not crazy.
Yeah.
But then when I think about this movie afterwards, it's probably where I get the most from it. So, like, you have basically, Japan post-World War II is a country that suddenly had a huge economic boom during the 80s. So, like, their economy was on the ups, like, fucking crazy. It was reaching new heights that had really never been seen by the country. So they were like, they were such a torn nation in that way. Like, they had lost a lot because of the U.S. During World War II. And yet now, due to Reconstruction, they have become...
They're at
like,
a high.
They're at this weird high with, like...
That they weren't at before. Like, nowhere close.
That's the thing. It's a twisted experience that they had. And you can make the argument that at the end of the movie, the final conflict takes place at the Tokyo Olympic Stadium, right?
Yep.
And at that conflict, the Olympic Stadium gets destroyed. It gets blown up by Tetsuo, right?
Yep.
And normally, historically speaking, the Olympic Stadium has always been seen as like a kind of like an icon or a symbol of Japan's economic growth due to the West. You can honestly make the argument that Tetsuo destroying that and the final conflict taking place there on that icon is kind of a rejection of that growth and that wealth that stemmed from
like
this.
We don't need the West.
Yeah. You make an argument that it's like, it's basically saying it's rejecting that evolution, I guess. Because, I mean, you can make an argument that Tetsuo is kind of a reference to Japan as a whole, suddenly being given this extreme power and capability that they never had with the birth of nuclear weapons. You know what I mean? Like, it's this new thing that is incredibly dangerous and that is spiraling out of control in a world that's spiraling out of control. Much like the world was during that time, because this isn't the peak of the Cold War. Mm. Or towards the end of the Cold War. I think this movie might have actually just come out right at the end.
Middle,
Cold War ended.
1988, right? So
Reagan, when was the Reagan speech?
Wasn't that 90s? Or was that like 89?
91. It ended in 91. So this actually is in the middle of the
Cold War.
Peak
Cold War, basically.
Yeah, I mean, he started writing the manga in 82, which is peak Cold War. So that's a world spiraling out of control if I've ever seen one. Yeah, but it's really interesting. Like, Tetsuo goes from being this punching bag to being immensely powerful in the same way that Japan does historically in that situation. So this movie is very much related to and inspired by and, if anything, a response to World War II and Japan's evolution and growth from that, which makes it really interesting to think about. Because like you said, like, the characters don't really matter from the perspective that we believe characters should matter. And they don't relate to you.
Yeah.
But Tetsuo kind of is a stand-in for Japan almost in that way.
Here. Yeah, and I think that if I was Japanese in Japan at the time, I definitely relate to this a lot.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, there's some movies that, like, they're clearly made to be related to by a particular audience.
Yeah, and
like,
we're not the audience for
this. I think
this
a really good comparison to this is actually the original Godzilla, where a giant radiation-powered beast comes and destroys Japan and leaves it in massive ruin with radiation-based powers. Yeah, Godzilla is also a metaphor for a nuclear bomb.
You know, I've never thought of it like that.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. He is also a metaphor for a nuclear bomb, and the original Japanese audiences watching that in the 50s or 60s, I can't remember the release date, definitely understood that and were aware of that. And there are several scenes. We're going to watch that movie eventually. I have it on the list.
Mm-hmm.
There are definitely scenes in Godzilla that directly allude to that fact. But, like, when the West saw it, they're like, ooh, giant lizard
giant
man.
Monster destroying the world.
Like, oh, very cool, Japan. We like you now. It's like, God, that's so fucking ironic. Like, the country that nuked them is now the country that's producing most of their current live-action Godzilla
films. Meanwhile, that film was made out of fucking, like, terror.
Yeah, and it was, like, terror again. And spite. Yeah. Like,
and then later, let's make more.
That's the thing with anime. Like, it's become very much like anime has become more and more consumed in the West, especially in the US.
Yeah, yeah.
But it can be easy for people watching here to forget that a lot of early anime stemmed from the fact that a lot of animators went through some real horrible shit post-World War II.
I mean, watching this movie, I didn't think of that connection until you brought it up.
Yeah, it's not an obvious one there. Like, especially, like, we have a Ghibli movie on this list. And Hayao Miyazaki has been, or is it Hayao Miyazaki? I always forget his first name. Miyazaki has been very, yeah, very sternly against, he's very anti-US, right? Which, I mean, hey, fair, can't blame him, right?
Yeah.
But, so, like, if you look at, like, Grave of the Fireflies, if we're going to watch that at some point, it's an incredibly painful film about post-World War II Japan. A lot of his movies have anti-imperialist, anti-US sentiment. And that is something that a lot of people very easily are willing to ignore or maybe just don't seem to realize when they're watching them for the first or second time. But it becomes more and more obvious the further you go with it. And that's, I think, a theme that kind of it shows in a lot of early animated theatrical films, especially in Akira,
yeah,
you know, more than anything else.
So, I
mean, anything else you guys want to add for this one?
Let me see the...
It's kind of hard to talk about this movie because...
I think we've covered about everything we wrote down.
Yeah, it's hard to really go more into it because, like we said, it's not a character movie, so we're not really talking about the character.
Yeah, there's like this one overall message, basically.
Yeah, yeah. And I would say that the three of us, we're not fucking geniuses. Like, we can't analyze everything under a microscope as well as like someone doing a video essay would have the ability to.
Yeah,
yeah.
A lot of what we're doing are just like our thoughts, our realizations, and stuff like that. So, like, there are probably a lot more to touch about in this scenario compared to that. But we are definitely not the people who are meant to do it.
No, definitely not.
But there is one thing I do want to talk about this movie. The fact that it bankrupted several studios that funded it, because this movie was the most expensive.
I also did not know that.
Yeah, it was the most expensive anime production at the time. And I think it was actually like, it was a joint
700 million yen.
Yeah, it was a joint project between a number of studios, and it ended up leaving several of them bankrupt and flopped. And you can either argue that it definitely was not separate from the economic downfall that hit Japan in the late 80s, early 90s. And it could technically be responsible for why, like, so many studios did not want to touch anime with, like, a 9-foot pole after this for so many years.
Because it was so expensive.
And, like, this was now the baseline. Like, the moment you produce something like this, you can't really go back that easily. So there was, like, a kind of blank area in Japanese animation for a couple of years until things kind of kicked back in with, like, the rebirth in the 90s. Because this movie, it was costly. This movie fucking took a toll on Japan as a whole.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of ridiculous.
And funny enough, it was the most expensive anime film at the time until a year later with Kiki.
Really?
Akiki was the next one.
Kiki doesn't look as good as this movie.
I don't know why it's that expensive, but like, I don't know. I saw
Kiki recently. Kiki's a fun movie. It does not look nearly as expensive as
not
this
at
film.
All, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just looking at stills from it.
It's like... hard with stills, but like, it's a Ghibli movie, but it's also not even like the best Ghibli movie. Oh man, I definitely just insulted somebody. But somebody just took that very personally.
I mean, with Ghibli, can you really be insulted when there's so many great ones?
I mean, I feel like there's like a clear, not a clear tier list of Ghibli, but there's like a sense of like, these are the upper echelon, and I don't think Kiki necessarily fits there.
But is it known to be that high?
Kiki?
Yeah.
You know, there's some people. It's not like one of the obvious ones, but...
Yeah, the obvious one, everyone picks a Spirited Away.
Which I don't like. I don't like Spirited Away very much. That's my
If you're
very
looking to offend
take.
People, that's it, right?
Yeah, that's my very hot take. I'm not a big fan... Wait, I didn't say it's bad. I'm just not a big fan of Spirited Away. I don't think it's a movie meant to speak to me,
yeah, but
I think
saying
that's fine.
If you wanted to offend people, you could have doubled down and been like,
and
Spirited
just go
Away,
into it, yeah.
Fucking trash can of a movie. It's
I,
garbage.
Look, you're the one who just said that, and we're going to definitely take that clip in isolation to anger people. So.
No, I heard Chris say that.
Tyler, you...
I've also never watched it,
I make
so
one
I
comment
no...
about your hands, Tyler.
That
one
is
comment,
staying
and
in,
you
so you really got nothing on today, so...
Slightly anti-Semitic.
Look...
Hanging out with Walt Disney a little
no,
too
no,
much.
No, 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 no. We literally, all three of us watched Borat like two nights ago.
I don't know, Chris. I don't know what you were doing just watching Walt Disney clips from the 30s, whenever
it's
the hell it was.
It's not my fault. It's really not. I'm innocent.
Alrighty.
We have you on fucking video.
Okay, my intentions were, Perfect Blue is the next movie we're going to talk about today. Tyler, why don't you intro us into that one?
Just going to let you sit there for a little bit.
Yeah, just make this awkward silence for like 10 seconds.
I mean, we're not really being quiet because we're talking.
No, I know. This is just to let everyone listening know that we're just staring at you right now.
This hurts. This hurts a lot.
Yeah. Take that long sip of whatever, that coffee. I hope that was...
Oh, God, that was disgusting, dude. Why'd you have to slurp it? Look, it showed up on there, too. Look, 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 look.
That's what you get.
That was oh my god, man. All right, Tyler, introduce Perfect Blue. Let's go.
Okay, Chris is dying over there.
Oh god.
So great. Perfect Blue is the next movie. It's the psychological thriller that shows a pop star, a K-pop star, who's
J-pop.
Trying to
J-pop. Tyler, please don't be racist.
J-pop.
Wow. All Asians are the same, Tyler, or what?
I can't believe you're saying that. Crazy.
Hey, Chris, what did you say at the top of the show?
I can't believe he's saying that all Asians look the same.
Yeah.
Wow, Tyler.
Continue, please.
Yeah, Chris, please
continue. No, Tyler, please continue, please.
Oh, look, Chris, what are you looking up? Tyler, Walt Tyler. Disney videos?
Tyler, you can only bring up that so many times, and you've already burnt out your uses. This is fresh meat. So I think you should just start, keep going where you're going, Tyler, please. I want to hear your thoughts.
J-pop star?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, glad you got that right this time.
That's not about as slip as you what you said, so you can't really...
Yeah.
I've known you for like 10, 15... God, I've known you for a very long time. I'm allowed to make jokes at your expense. I've known you for enough years that it's fine.
Cancel culture is not going to be on your door. Anyway, a J-pop star who is transitioning from her Korean music to become an actress. And during that time, it becomes... a movie about identity, about a stalker, and about obsessive celebrity culture.
Yeah, this is a deeply unsettling film.
Oh, it's creepy as hell.
Yeah, it's like there's like so this is directed by Satoshi Kon. Right? Mm-hmm. He's a great fucking anime director. He's done probably some of the best things to come out of Japan like during his time. Like he did this. He did a movie called Paprika, which would inspire Inception. He did Tokyo Godfathers, which I still have to see. He did Paranoia Agent. Like he does some really good unsettling shit, and it's always just a fucking fantastic view with his stuff. It is a shame he passed away, I think, in 2008 from pancreatic cancer, which is a huge loss just for it's sad always, and it's also just a huge loss because he was incredibly talented, immensely so. Like this movie is really really.
I mean, yeah,
good.
You could see it in this movie.
Yeah,
I mean, if you haven't seen anything else and you just watch this movie, you could tell he's just great.
I mean, this is just his directorial debut. You know?
Like, yeah.
And then it went on to inspire a bunch of other people, like Darren Aronofsky, I think this is how to say his last name, who directed Black Swan. He continually says he didn't take inspiration from this movie. Everyone calls bullshit because that's basically a very similar look at celebrity life or the want to be like somebody else.
Have any of us here actually watched Black Swan?
No.
I have not.
I have not. No, so that's a no across the board.
But here's he says he didn't take from Perfect Blue for this movie. He is a fan of the director's name.
Satoshi Kon.
He's a big fan of him. I think Kon said he liked either Requiem for a Dream or Black Swan. He liked one of those movies.
Mm. Both of them loosely took from this at some point.
Well, from Requiem from a Dream directly takes a scene from this movie, and that he admits. That he says, yeah, I love that movie. I'm basically shot for shot.
Didn't he buy the rights for it?
For that scene, yes.
Yeah, just to be able to use that scene in the film. Have any of us seen Requiem for a Dream?
I haven't seen any of Darren's movies.
Nope, me neither. Okay.
We're just throwing movies out there right now.
This is just common controversy around this film. I mean, I guess controversy is a strong word.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll probably see those movies in the future.
Well, I mean, we're definitely seeing two of his movies with Wrestler and Black Swan.
That's right. He does Wrestler. I've been wanting to see that for a long time.
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, no, but I mean, yeah, this movie's clearly influential in the thriller genre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, I've never seen Black Swan, but I've always heard it's basically Perfect Blue. I mean, and if it is Perfect Blue, it's probably pretty fucking good, because Perfect Blue is a really good movie.
Yep. It does a great job of illustrating people's obsession with celebrities.
Oh, yeah.
Like, crazy obsession.
Yeah. I guess we should actually give us a small summary of it. Like he said, yeah, she's a woman who is transitioning from being a pop idol in a pop idol band to acting, and she's trying to do pretty much an image overhaul and show that she's not this innocent pop idol anymore, and that she can do more mature roles and all this stuff. And as
very
she does
similar
this,
to Disney stars.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. There's a great talking point there. And as she's doing that, she has an obsessed fan. She has several people obsessed with her, but one of the first one we see is an obsessed fan who sees her changes as kind of like her betraying herself, and he sees her as an imposter because there's no way that the innocent, I think her name is like Mime? Maybe?
Mima. Yeah.
Mima. There's no way that the innocent Mima would be doing a nude photo shoot or in a rape scene in a film or something. There's no way the innocent Mima would do that. Jesus, this is an imposter who's slandering her name, and he becomes completely obsessed with her and a danger to her and others around her. And that's a pretty big premise of the film. And the other side of it is that while Mima's doing this, she is having a deeply intense identity crisis alongside a nervous breakdown because of the choices she's making. She's not sure if she really wanted to switch from being a pop star to an actress. And she feels like she's sacrificing a lot of herself or sacrificing certain things because her managers and the people around her are telling her to in order to fit this new image she's trying to create. And it's just, it's a great movie, a great look at someone having a nervous breakdown in that way. And it's just deeply intense.
Yeah, like the scene. Well, first of all, any time violence happens, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I compare we were talking
about
it.
You never see it coming, first of all.
We were talking about it a bit before. I compared it to Watchmen, the comic, in that Alan Moore tried to keep a lot of the violence very toned down so that when you'd have things that are super violent, that like full page spread would just be super impactful. And like you would kind of be taken aback. And I think this movie does kind of a very similar thing.
Yeah, it does. I mean, the one scene where the stalker is the one who's going around committing these murders because he wants to make it so she doesn't act. Like, he goes out to kill the screenwriter. He first sends, like, a mail bomb as a warning to the screenwriter.
Well, it was to her.
Originally, it was to her to be like, hey, don't do this. It's a warning. Like, here, I'll send you a warning. It'll blow up in your face, literally, to not go act. So that doesn't work. So he's like, all right, I'll kill the screenwriter so you don't have anybody to write your lines. Mm-hmm. And that scene, he goes straight for the eyes, and that just...
Oh, yeah, that one.
That, like, any... For me, I don't watch much anime, but anytime I do watch anime that has violence in it, it's always way more graphic than anything you would show on live action. It's always straight eye shot. It's not like, oh, couple stabs to the chest, leave. No, eyes.
No, I'm going to gouge your fucking eyes out.
Then chest, then everything else.
Ironically, that is mostly because of Akira, which kind of set the precedent and the expectation in the West for a lot of animation to be like either super hypersexualized or super violent. A lot of that actually stems from Akira. So going full half circle there.
And then, but even with Akira, like, yes, there is violence in that, but at the same time, you see it coming. Like, you see people with guns draw. It's like, all right, someone is most likely going to get lit up in a second.
Yeah.
Compared to this, it's like, you know, like, this scene feels tense. Oh, he has a screwdriver and it's going in his eye.
Yeah, it felt really different too, because Akira was kind of based around violence for most of the film, right? Because like that's just the way
that's the world of Akira.
Yeah, post apocalyptic whatever, right? Perfect Blue like doesn't feel like that at all.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a normal,
it's like a normal film. Yeah, it's just a crazy stalker, and then all of a sudden, bam, screwdriver in the eye.
I mean, if we're talking, I think it has, technically speaking,
sorry,
there we go. I think he technically has less violence overall, but it hits more intensely because of that.
Yeah,
and I think the violence is directed crazy well.
Yeah,
I mean, directing in this is fucking
great.
Amazing.
Yeah, the shaky cam?
There's like a little shaky cam, which for a second there, I wasn't sure if it was actually happening or if it was just the rip from where we were watching it, because it reminded me kind of like how VHSs used to do it and shit.
Yeah.
But no, it's intentional. It's great. It's unsettling. Whenever there's like a murder, we have all the cuts between like things that people are seeing while they're doing it and remembering and shit. It's just deeply, deeply. Just,
the longer the movie goes on, the more obviously Mima is losing her grip on reality. And the way the editing works is like, oh, it keeps cutting from this scene to another scene. It's like, wait, did this already happen? Are you just dreaming it? Or we are just as lost as she is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scenes start to flow together and like swim together in a way that it's like, she has no idea what's real and not anymore.
Yeah. The directing did a great job of showing mental instability.
Yeah. It does a great job of displaying what it's like for like someone to like not know. Like, that literally losing their mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like there's a scene later where like, the director in the movie says cut, and it opens up and it's a set, and you're like, wait, is just what you think is happening, or is this actually just a set and we're watching a scene happen?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the direction of this film is impeccable. Mm-hmm. It's just so good.
What else is there for this? We got... Oh, the end. Well, I mean, the ending. We can talk about
but
that.
There was, I want to save the ending because there was something else. Actually, one thing I want to compare it to. It reminds me of season 5 of BoJack, where BoJack begins taking opioids as painkillers and starts to lose a sense of what's real and what's not.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just has a very similar nervous breakdown. I wonder if this... I mean, I feel like that's something that we've seen in other places as well.
I feel like that's the trope of an actress losing herself has... I don't know if it came from this, but it's been a thing. So it's not direct...
Not directly, probably.
Unless it's the first one. I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, I guess, yeah. I don't know if they, if anyone on involved in the production of BoJack saw Perfect Blue and tried to adapt
some of that.
Somebody
probably did.
I feel like it's possible. This is a very good film. It's a rather well-known film. I wouldn't be surprised if this kind of leaked its inspirations into BoJack. But, yeah, it definitely, that was definitely something that came to mind while we were watching. While I was watching this.
Yeah, I mean, people made the comparisons when the... when season 5 came out,
yeah.
They made the comparisons, but I don't know if anybody from BoJack's production came out and said, yeah, we obviously saw Perfect Blue, we did it because of this. But again, the idea of an actress losing herself isn't novel. I don't know if, again, I don't know if Perfect Blue is the first one to do it, but
I feel like there was likely something older.
Yeah, but Perfect Blue is probably one of the more popular ones.
And probably one of the ones, at least that I've seen, that has done it best. Like, it's just done so well.
Yeah, I can't think of anything that I've seen that relates. Birdman, kind of.
I guess Birdman, yeah, that's a good pick for something of that similar kind of state.
Not to that extent of, like,
yeah,
people stalking and murdering, but there's a similarity there.
Yeah. And I guess one thing I want to talk about this that we kind of briefly mentioned before, but a fair comparison here is comparing, because we don't really have a J-pop pop idol scene in the U.S. in the same way.
Like,
we have pop stars.
It's not the same celebrity culture that is in
Japan.
Japan.
It's
or
not that
or Korea
culture.
Even.
No, we have. I mean, there's stan Twitter, which is a
yeah, but
place,
that's usually
but
that's not that's not from stuff that originated in the U.S. Like, that's not Western stuff that they stand.
Oh no,
well,
no, no, no.
Yeah. Like,
no.
Usually,
I mean,
oh, I'm assuming you're talking about like K-pop stans.
Right? No. There is more than
like
just
Beyonce.
There's pop stans,
but I don't.
Taylor Swift.
I would argue that still doesn't reach
Ariana Grande.
I would still argue none of that reaches the same level that it does in the East with
no, that's complete different type
of completely different culture, different atmosphere.
Yeah, because like they're like gods out there.
Yeah,
there's
like,
there's
people
a very
literally
strong
worship the feet, like the fucking like steps they take, you know. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, we can see some of that overlap happening here, but I think the closest parallel to that in to this pop idol group type thing is probably like child stars in this film, because
do you think like that's the comparison, or is child stars the comparison of what she's going through?
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I said it completely backwards. I'm trying to open up the notes at the same time. Yeah, I think that the comparison can be made to child stars, right? Like,
yeah.
You grow up, you have this, like, you're in these, you're a star.
Selena Gomez.
Yeah, that's Selena Gomez, Ariana Grande.
Yeah.
There's more, but
Miley Cyrus.
Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, that's another one.
Actually, Miley Cyrus might be
the best one.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, you grow up, you have, like, this innocent image, and then when you try to break away from the thing that you were in, you're trying to, like, redefine what you look like and what you are, and to some fans that's such a jarring thing to see that, like,
yeah,
they'll either, like, some people will break away, some people will love it, or in this case some people will go fucking insane. So it's not like it I think that's probably the closest parallel to what Mima's going through in this.
Yeah, I mean, I think Miley Cyrus is probably the perfect example, right? Because she went from Hannah Montana, this innocent like girl, to fucking twerking on stage.
Yeah, I mean, before that, I would have probably said, like, Ariana Grande is a pretty... I mean, they're all kind of good ones. Like, even, like, Selena Gomez, like, after she kind of got off of Disney, she did, like, Spring Breakers as that pivot movie.
Yeah.
That redefine my image movie. They all kind of have that moment where they're trying to show, I'm not a little kid from Disney or Nickelodeon anymore.
Yeah. Ariana Grande has the same thing in her music, actually.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, but Ariana Grande, I think... Well, obviously, we know what that song's about, but I think Miley was way more...
Yeah, Miley was way more, like, jarring.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't subtle.
Yeah, well, Ariana Grande like was subtle, Ariana Grande was like a small, not small, slow.
Yeah, it was like a slow ramp up.
Yeah,
Miley Cyrus was a complete 180.
Oh yeah,
I know nothing about music, so I fucking know.
You saw the VMAs?
Did I? No, I didn't. I'm aware of the VMAs.
No, but I'm saying
you just need to know. Like,
I know about was the guy dressed like Beetlejuice.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, I remember the guy dressed in Beetlejuice.
Yeah, that.
She was on stage, but she had fucking like a strap on hanging off of her.
Yeah, I do remember that. That's a fun one. Oh, man.
At a show,
a simpler time.
I mean,
well, I don't.
I'll go look at that.
Wow.
Yeah, Faison, what are you showing?
Miley Cyrus, the dildo.
Yeah, that.
Massive dildo,
yeah,
by the way.
That's
huge cock.
Wow. Miley Cyrus has a giant penis. Holy shit.
Look, just look at this picture. Come on.
Yeah, she definitely
like,
changed her image.
Yeah, she's got a dildo and she's pretending to fuck the girl on stage.
So, yeah, a hell of a pivot from Hannah Montana. In the 2000s.
No, what do you mean? That wasn't a clear season 4 arc.
I don't remember this episode.
Did you just leave this picture open?
Yeah. but further on that, like, parallel. So at the end of the movie, we realize that the person who's actually been pulling the strings of this a little bit and causing these murders is her old agent. and someone who had not wanted her to leave from being a pop idol to doing music.
Yep.
And that kind of, to me, it kind of made me think about like stage parents, you know, okay. Like someone, a parent who has their kid in yeah. this industry, who like doesn't want them to make this sudden shift in personality, you know? And then like now, like their kid is no longer, they're no longer living. Cause like this woman was a previous pop idol when she was younger. So she's kind of living vicariously through Mima on what yep. she wasn't able to succeed in doing. And that pretty much screams to me like stage parents who keep their kids in acting and shit so that they can live vicariously through them. And then suddenly their kids like
or even
pivot
like
away.
Football, like sports parents.
Yeah, actually, that's a good comparison as well. Yeah, and it definitely makes me think about that. Like the kid's no longer pretty much living for them, and now they're just not fucking okay with it. In this case, you know, things are obviously ramped up a bit, so she goes insane and tries to murder her and kind of steal her identity.
Basically, yeah,
she does steal her identity for a while.
Yeah, she does.
Tentacle, yeah.
Yeah. She basically wears the same outfit, or at least one of the her J-pop outfit.
Yeah. I mean, even beyond that.
So I'm reading the wiki right now. And
you're reading the last line?
Yeah.
Because it's weird.
What's the last
line?
Weird.
So I watched the dub, right?
Same.
Which, so, but what this is saying, right?
You watch sub?
Yeah.
I just felt like, I heard that watching the dub would be good because it's a thriller. I know that statement alone probably going to piss some people off.
I don't know.
But no, so the last paragraph, basically, right? When Mima goes to the psychiatric hospital to visit the her agent, Rumi, right? The nurses confuse the two of them, right? And when she says that she's the real thing, in the Japanese version, it's in Rumi's voice.
In the English dub, it's Mima's, which is stupid because, like, really?
Is it really that stupid?
I don't like that ending. I don't like that.
I don't like the fact that they just switched, but it makes like.
But like they really like she's not unrecognizable. She's only unrecognizable when she's dressed as that one person. When you put them when they're both not in costume, you can tell the difference.
Yeah, but if it was her, if it was Mima originally in the psychiatric hospital,
yeah,
and Rumi's the one visiting. She's but the one dressed as her.
But why would Mima be in the psychiatric hospital? Because
the
oh, and then she took her life. You're saying?
Yeah. She took that. Like that's what that ending's implying.
Yeah.
Huh. That's I was not aware of this at all.
I wasn't either until I read the last line.
That's very interesting.
Which would make sense because Mima probably actually went crazy.
Maybe I don't know how much I like that compared.
Yeah,
I don't think
I like it that much, yeah. But it would make sense.
It could make sense. I kind of like because I mean I know I was very confused at the end of the movie. What the fuck does Perfect Blue mean? That was my biggest question when I
still don't
know
that actually.
I found out. Apparently, blue is like a color of happiness in Japanese culture. So
that's
for it
weird.
To be perfect blue at the end of the movie, it's like only the blue sky behind Mima, meaning that she is, or at least to the interpretations that I found, it means that like. She's came to terms with herself and her identity.
Yeah.
She knows who she is by the end of the movie. That's why there's only the blue skies. There's no more gray. It's perfect blue, right? It probably also has more of an ironic meaning to it just because of how fucked up most of what's happening to her is during
yeah.
the film.
Mm.
Again, I think that's kind of a Japanese cultural thing that we don't quite 100% get.
I also don't get the fact that blue is a happy color or like calm.
I mean, I guess calming.
Blue is calming, yeah.
But blue here, I feel like, is... You associate it with like sadness.
You can.
Yeah.
That's like mostly what it is here.
I don't know. I think like a blue sky is a good thing. Like a beach, another good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, again, it is feel like a cultural difference here. I mean, this is also loosely based off of a novel. I don't know if the novel had the same name. I think it had a different one. But yeah, I don't know. Maybe somewhere from there.
No, it's
in that
the
based
novel,
off
same
a novel.
Thing.
Same
Perfect
but,
blue, complete metamorphosis.
Yeah, that's the second part.
Okay, perfect blue, complete metamorphosis. Well, that's
it could mean two things, though.
Yeah, it could.
If we're following the Japanese ending.
Yeah, I guess it could. I don't know how
I'm
I
not. Yeah, I'm
I still don't know how I feel about that.
I get, like, I understand. It's like, oh, it could be that like the bad guy wins at the end, but it's like, I don't really like.
I kind of prefer the way the dub portrays it here.
Yeah,
because
so
then
I.
That just makes the movie,
yeah,
messed
I mean,
up movie, but that just.
It's just a downer ending.
Yeah,
I don't think it's that bad of an ending, though.
I don't think it's a bad ending.
I just think it's depressing.
I just don't think they go, so what's the point of it? That they win, that the bad guy wins? It's like...
Yeah, I mean, I guess this kind of could be that we're looking at like an Eastern movie with a Western point of view, but...
But that's not even that.
With a Western
like,
point of view, I still like the dub more in that way.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even take it as that, because I'd have no problem with movies having a bad, not bad, downer ending. I don't have a problem with that. I just don't think this movie needed that.
That's fair.
I don't think so, but it is, like... kind of fitting in the fact that in like the eastern areas, right? Like a lot of people, a lot of these big K-pop stars will like end up killing, like committing suicide because of community pressure and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
So it would make sense that she actually ends up in a mental hospital.
Because of the pressure?
Yeah, because of the pressure mm-hmm. of having a stalker and trying to redo her image.
Yeah, but then I guess you would have to look at the movie differently, because like obviously everything that happened to her was because of an outside source.
Yeah.
There's nothing in the movie that suggests it was just her feeling pressured by everything and losing it.
I disagree with that. Like, there was definitely already moments early on where she feels pressured. Like, so much of the movie is seen through the lens of other people. But, like, when we see her alone in her house, yeah. right? She's already kind of, like, feeling this intense pressure of, like, I didn't want to do this. Why didn't I just say no?
Okay, so...
With the transition, you know? Like, I feel like she's already under... Like, I feel like her nervous breakdown is definitely, like, amplified by everything going around her.
Yeah.
But the seeds of it were definitely still there.
So, okay. So, I think if you went with the ending that it's Rumi... that the murders shouldn't have happened, or would have been just... Because the murders happening make it obviously like, oh, something is happening. She has a right to be like more freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
If they didn't happen and they were just like, oh, he's missing. It's like, oh, no, he was here the whole time. You were just freaking out. It's like, oh, that's how you get the ending where she's insane.
Mm-hmm.
By actually killing them, it's like, oh, no, you had a right to go crazy. You had not a right. Like, you had a right to be freaked out. This is actually happening.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I agree with you.
Uh-huh.
I just think that in the way the story portrays it, it is closer to the first one. Or the
yeah,
second
I think
one,
the
say.
Ending was meant to be ambiguous, though.
Yeah.
I don't think it was meant to be...
disgusting.
Well, I mean, it's only ambiguous if you dub it two ways.
Yeah, the fact that...
It's only ambiguous if you dub it two ways.
The fact that the dub and sub had different voice actors for that scene is kind of ridiculous. Like, it shouldn't have been that way.
Yeah, you would never expect that.
It should have been, like, a perfect follow.
It's very weird. It's very weird.
It is.
Mm.
I do wonder what led to that. It's very interesting. I think that mostly covers... all my major thoughts on this.
Yeah.
There is one last thing.
What?
Bjork, during the... this doesn't even sound like a real world. During the production of this film, an actual... Can you just type up...
Oh, wait. The Bjork... I know the Bjork stalker.
Crazy fucking Bjork stalker.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was an insane thing that happened during the production of this film, where a star was being stalked
by... I don't want to sound fucked. This guy looks like a stalker.
Maison, you won't believe this it, guy but you're right like on the money.
No, but just look at his face, though. Like
that picture's 100% the picture before he dies.
No. The picture before he dies is much worse than this one.
Oh, then never mind.
Yeah. So basically, that's the picture before he dies.
Okay, that's creepy.
Yeah,
oh,
he goes
no,
fucking
no, stop,
insane.
Stop, stop. I can't
yeah,
look. I
yeah,
can't
he
look,
goes
I
absolutely
look.
Fucking insane.
Yeah.
So basically, yeah, he was an obsessed super fan of a singer.
Icelandic singer, Björk.
Yeah, obsessed super fan of her. And he starts recording.
He was also a pest control worker. That explains a lot. You had to be kind of crazy to be a pest control
worker.
Why are we targeting the pest control people? They're just trying to work, man.
Oh, wait, no, never mind. Sorry, I was confusing pest control with exterminators.
Okay, well, we don't got to shit on the exterminators either.
Well, sorry. Like you know those people that will, like, you know, you have a wild animal in your house and they'll come and, like, kill it for
those
you?
Those are exterminators, yes.
Those are exterminators, yeah. I mean,
if you're overexcited to kill the thing.
Yeah, that's what
I mean.
If
you're a little
that's
bit
too
happy with it. But, like, I get that some people, it's like, it's a job, I need the money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But, he was an obsessed fan of Bjork's, and he began chronicling his obsession with her over these videos. And he would eventually send a package that had, like, sulfuric acid in it in the attempt to kill her. And then he planned to kill himself right after. He kills himself. And
I'm sorry. He initially intended to construct a bomb filled with hypodermic needles containing HIV-tainted blood.
Yeah, he...
Which satisfied his desire to have a lasting effect on Bjork's life.
Yeah, he was psychotic.
And then he realized he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But that's crazy.
Yeah, he was a deeply disturbed individual. And you can see, like, there are the tapes of him, like, recording and just seeing this. That's where all those images you saw were from. They exist. They are online. And they're fucking terrifying.
So it's the last one.
Yeah. Especially the last one. Yeah. He kills himself pretty much right after. Or maybe in it. I've never seen
no,
this.
He kills himself on camera.
Butt naked, shaves his head, paints his face red and green.
Yep.
And then shoots himself.
Yeah. Because he wanted to be with Bjork in the afterlife. Yeah, deeply fucking disturbing shit. And that happened during the production of this film. So it's this movie ended up being very topical and on brand for or not on brand, but very topical for what was going on literally at the exact same time.
This is why I could never survive as a celebrity, dude. No.
I mean, this isn't the first one we saw about this either. Like, Selena, that's a really famous one.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, just shit like this, man, I couldn't do it. Yeah.
Side note, listen to Bjork, she's great.
I've never listened to Bjork, but you know what? Yeah, after this shit, maybe I should give her a listen.
Well, she's a nice lady. She sent a card and flowers to his family.
Wow, that's fucking, like, I think I would, like, I'd be fucking way too fucked up over the situation to send cards and flowers to anybody, to have, like, the mental fortitude and to be able to do that.
Interview she went, I was very upset that somebody had died.
Bjork sounds fucking amazing.
She's in the next Eggers.
And then she went, I'd be lying if it didn't scare the fuck out of me.
Well, yeah.
But,
yeah.
I mean, like, the fact that she was also upset that somebody died.
Mm. Holy shit, that's insane. Bjork, man. Holy shit, I gotta listen to Bjork, because Bjork seems to deserve everything.
Yeah. Again, she's in the next Eggers movie.
The what?
Robert Eggers, the guy who did Lighthouse, she's in his
next
movie.
Oh, wow, okay. Yep. Well, that'll be great.
Yep.
Can't wait to see that now. What is there a title or anything attached to it?
Northmen, the one about Vikings.
Oh, yes. That is gonna be fucking really cool.
Yep.
Either way, yeah, so this just horrifying situation that really did happen while this movie was being made. Deeply disturbing.
What part, the movie or the guy?
both?
I don't know how you can laugh right now, Tyler. We can pivot.
On that note.
Yeah, on that note, let's go to, Jesus Christ, I'm sorry, I'm just still, like, a little bit shell-shocked, because just looking at the images of it is such a fucking horrifying situation. But yes, let's pivot over to the final movie on our list, the
Princess
Ghibli
Mononoke.
Film. Yes, Princess Mononoke. This is my personal favorite Ghibli film, and probably, I guess, it. I don't think it's the hardest to describe, but it's not a simple one to describe.
It's not a simple
others.
One to describe.
No, I mean, like,
a lot happens.
A fair amount happens, yeah. I guess the way to boil it down, it is the de facto environmentalism film. The movie opens with our protagonist, whose name, Akiyata?
Oh my god, I don't remember his name.
I think it's Akiyata or Nakata. Something.
Ashitaka.
I was very close.
Yeah.
I was rather close. Ashitaka. It opens with his village being attacked by a boar who is being turned into a demon from its own hate, from its hatred. And he kills the boar, but he gets cursed by the demon.
He gets wounded.
He ends up cursing him.
Yeah.
He gets wounded and cursed by the demon, which was a forest god, right? A god of rage. And he ends up having to be exiled from his village, and he goes and tries to figure out basically what caused this. Like, what? Yeah. Why is the demon? Why did he become a demon? What's going on? And
yeah, this curse also gives him superhuman strength, but it will eventually kill him.
It is going to kill him, yeah. But it does give him superhuman strength. So he goes on a journey to figure out what's going on with that, and he finds a iron village led by a woman named Lady Eboshi that has been burning into the forest in order to get more and more iron. And Lady Eboshi has the intent of killing the forest god. In the forest, there's, like, a whole bunch of spirits, wolf spirits, ape spirits, more boars. And there's a woman named Mononoke, Princess Mononoke, who lives alongside the wolf spirits. And most of the movie is basically these forces kind of, like, coming to a head with one another and clashing, despite the fact that there is no definitive villain in this story whatsoever. Everybody kind of, it's more just people with different ideals coming into clash with one another.
It's people trying to do what's best for, like, especially in the leader sense, like, especially Lady Eboshi, it's people trying to do what's best for their people.
Mm-hmm.
No matter the consequence. Like, they're just trying to be the best, like, leader they could be.
They're trying to better themselves, and it's not exactly, okay, you can say it's in a selfish way because it's detrimental to the environment, but it's not like every other environmental movie where it's like, while you're here, money.
Detrimental in a sense that it's beneficial for the village.
Yeah.
You know? Like, it's helping them survive.
Yeah. Like, Lady Eboshi, like, this iron village that she created seems to be probably the best place around. Because, like, we keep hearing about this crazy emperor who wants to live forever. So many villages in the countryside are being attacked by samurai and shoguns and all this stuff. Whereas, like, Lady Eboshi's village is mostly peaceful until the samurai come knocking.
Yep.
The women, she buys out women's contracts from brothels and gives them work in the Iron Village and gives them a life that they all seem to love and enjoy. They're treated fairly and equally. So, like, there's true equality throughout this village.
It's like refugee for social outcasts.
Yeah. Like she's the only person that she has, like, a bunch of lepers who work under her.
Are people that are affected with leprosy where, like, parts of their body just fall off.
Yeah, their skin begins to decay and rot. Yeah. And she's willing, and that, like, especially back in the day, was considered to be, like, it was the ultimate taboo to ever, like, come in contact with a leper. Lepers were usually, like, sent to live on their own.
Transfers over to you or some bullshit.
Like, I mean, Like, that's probably one of the most famous stories in the Bible is, like, Jesus curing a leper. You know what I mean? Like, there was a huge taboo among people with leprosy. And yet Lady Eboshi is willing to, like, change their bandages, to wash their skin, to be with them and to treat them fairly and like human beings. You know, and they work for her. They design weapons and stuff for her. But she still treats them like people, which is a hell of a lot more than they would ever be getting anywhere else. Yeah, it's like Lady Eboshi is a fair leader who wants what's best for Irontown and who wants to help her people. And that puts her in conflict with the forest and the nature spirits, but it doesn't make her a bad person.
She wouldn't be a bad person because she has her rights, her way of doing things.
Yeah. I mean, like, in another story, a female leader creating Irontown and pushed raging against God, trying to save her people, could probably be seen as the protagonist of another movie.
Yeah, you know?
If things were framed differently, she could just as easily be a protagonist.
I mean, he does a good job of illustrating what actual leaders go through, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's all perspective.
You have to make sacrifices to move forward.
Yeah. I think the closest thing we have to a villain is Jijo?
Yeah, because he just wants, he doesn't want money, he just wants... Yeah.
Everyone wants everything and I have a chance to have it, is what he says. And I think that's, but like, he's more of a result of things, you know?
Like, he just saw it, it's like, oh, I can help you and then I'll get something.
As he saw opportunity.
Yeah.
You know? But like, he's not a bad person. Like, the first time we meet him, it's because Ashikata is trying to like... give gold for rice and the woman is not accepting it, but he explains the situation and he basically helps Ashikata and he has dinner with him, he makes food with him. He clearly is not a bad person.
No.
He's not like a malicious villainous man. He's just a guy who saw opportunity.
Yeah. Which is like a normal person.
Yeah, he's just a normal dude. He's a guy who's like, "Oh, well, you know what? I can help Irontown. I can get my money." And I can, you know, give this to the king and all this shit. And doesn't, you know, I know that the shogun's attacking and stuff, but whatever. I'm just going to, I see opportunity.
I'll make my money my own way.
Yeah, exactly. So like, even him is not like a true villain. Like, even at the end of the story, he doesn't get like some grand comeuppance or anything. He's like, fool's luck.
That sucks.
Yeah, shit happens. He's not out here like, I'm going to kill the forest gods.
It's like, oh, I didn't get what I wanted. I'm going to kill you now. It's like, oh, this happened.
Yeah, he just goes out and he's like, oh, what are you going to do? And I think it's just really interesting that this movie's pretty much just about different perspectives and not about, like... It's not as ham-fisted as, like, environmentalist movies like Avatar.
Which takes from this.
Definitely... I mean, let's be real. A lot of shit takes from this. A lot of, like, modern Star Wars animated stuff takes from this because Dave Filoni, who's in charge of the Clone Wars and Rebels and deeply influences The Mandalorian... he's directly stated that this is a heavy influence on a lot of his stuff, to the point that he includes wolves, giant wolves, in Rebels because of how much he loves this movie. And I can't fucking blame him. I also really love this movie. It's not as ham-fisted as like Avatar or Fern Gully or there's way more environmentalism movies. I just can't blank it.
Pocahontas.
I don't like Pocahontas. There's more, but it's not ham-fisted. It's nuanced. Everything is just about these different people in conflict, you know, and nobody's right, nobody's wrong, but people are suffering no matter how you look at it.
Yeah.
And I think I really enjoy that aspect of it. You know, it treats its audience like with a level of respect in that way.
Yeah.
You know, like it treats its viewership fairly.
Enough to not just paint one side as good as one as bad.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's just makes it such a more interesting film than things that were coming out in the West at the same time, dealing with the same
problems,
concepts and stuff. On top of that, I think we can talk about a few things production wise. The dub's great,
amazing.
Yeah, it's a Disney.
It always has great. Ghibli always gets great cast for their dubs. Yeah.
Well, it was because Disney distributed all of the Ghibli films under the subdivision Miramax.
Yeah.
So they were pretty much in charge of getting all their dubs. So it makes almost every Ghibli film have a damn near perfect dub. I think that the lead in The Wind Arises is miscast. I think it's what's his name? Oh my god, fuck.
From what?
He's in The Dark Knight Rises, but he's also in a lot of other stuff and I hate myself.
Tom Hardy?
No, not Tom Hardy. Fuck.
Christian Bale.
No, he plays Robin in The Dark Knight Rises, but
oh,
not
Joseph
really.
Gordon-Levitt.
Thank you. Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Holy shit, I really blanked on that. I think he plays the lead in The Wind Arises.
I know Christian Bale plays Howl and no.
I could totally be off about that. The Wind Rises.
Wind Rises.
Yes.
I think you're right.
I could be off. Yeah, look at the IMDb. Let's just see if I'm wrong.
You're not.
I'm not. I'm right.
No, Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in that. Emily Blunt, John Krasinski's in that.
Yeah. I mean, most of the cast in that's really good, especially the guy who plays this the Italian like aerial.
John Krasinski's in it. What?
It says Honcho number two, so I'm guessing he doesn't do much unless the numbering in that movie means something.
I don't know. I can't remember. I don't really remember John Krasinski being in this. Some of these movies got dubbed twice by different studios. So maybe there's a version of the dub with John Krasinski. Because I know when I watched...
I know. I think the version of the dub with Joseph Gordon-Levitt is the one with John Krasinski.
No. He just plays a totally different character. My bad. Never mind. I thought I was misreading that. But yeah, I feel like the performance given to the protagonist there is like super bland. Totally off topic. But yeah, Disney normally does really, really great Ghibli dubs. Like there's not really ever any mistakes there.
I mean, in this one, in Princess Mononoke, it's Billy Crudup, who played Dr. Manhattan in the Watchmen movie as Ashitaka. Mm. And then Claire Danes is Sun, the wolf, the woman who was raised by wolves. I was going to say wolf woman, but that's not right.
Sun? Was that her name?
Yeah, Sun. It's Claire Danes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's... And then Billy Bob Thornton plays...
Joji?
Jigo. In the English version, it's called Jigo. It's not Joji, no.
not the artist.
Not Filthy Frank. But yeah, no, Billy Bob Thornton plays Jigo. I thought he was miscast because, Grant, I watched Fargo over the quarantine, and I can only picture that voice as Lorne Malvo. And to see Lorne Malvo as a bigger... monk impersonator, I guess. He impersonates a monk.
Is he impersonating or is he actually a monk? I don't think that was ever technically touched on.
I thought he was impersonating. Either way,
maybe monks are just wild in this world.
Maybe. But, you know, hearing that voice coming out of him, obviously a lot, I don't care. I love his voice anyway. But just, look at him, it's like, this feels, his actions. I'm like, okay, I can see Billy Bob doing his actions. The look of the character, I'm like, I can't picture Malvo as this, Lorne Malvo, the character you play in Fargo, as this big guy.
I think maybe me and Faison, because me and Faison both had no problem.
I've seen Fargo. I know what you're talking about. I didn't really
connect
it. Yeah.
Okay.
It wasn't a thing for me.
I haven't seen Fargo, so I also definitely didn't have a problem with it. Because Tyler, you're just crazy.
He was in the first season of Fargo, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Granted, that's the only thing I've seen Billy Bob in besides the Bad News Bears movie, but that could be anybody playing.
He does play a pretty good character, though.
In Fargo?
A defining character for him, I think.
Oh, yeah, you saw half the season. Yeah. He does something way more ridiculous later.
Okay, see, that's why I don't feel that way, I think.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've actually ever seen him in anything, now that I'm thinking about
it. Also, Fargo, great show. Watch it, Chris.
It's literally on the list. I think it's soon, isn't it?
Well, no, you kept pushing it.
I didn't mean to.
I know, it just happened
to get pushed.
Things
happen, yeah. It's scheduled at some point, probably.
No, it's not. It's completely off the list.
Oh, do we have to remove it?
No, yeah, at this point, it's completely off the list.
Well, Faison, you have four blank spots in there. Oh, yep, there it is. That's right before fucking Peaky Blinders. I can't.
Oh, yeah, you're right. You're right. My bad.
Yeah, no, I think it just whenever
there's a TV show, we have to figure out where to put it.
Yeah.
Scheduling's hard.
We have to give it a 4-week block to be like, all right, that's our next TV one.
But back on Princess Mononoke, the script was the dub was actually partially rewritten by Neil Gaiman, which is a really fun fact.
Because mm-hmm.
Neil Gaiman's fucking amazing. I love pretty much everything I've read of Neil Gaiman's works. So, I mean, that's just another plus towards this movie, you know? Another thing that we actually haven't mentioned is how fucking beautiful it is.
Oh, yeah.
This movie is gorgeous.
This was the movie I was going to say. This or Akira is definitely the best looking one. Granted, Perfect Blue is not a movie that it's supposed to be for the scenery because all the shots are very up close and in contained spaces.
Yeah.
Both of these, Mononoke is in a fantasy world in the woods. So you see these long, lush landscapes of the forest. Akira is a city, so you got cool city shots.
Yeah. I mean, I like looking at Mononoke more, but that's definitely intentional. You know, you're not really meant to enjoy staring at some of the scenes in, Akira. It's meant to feel gritty and dirty.
Yeah, it's supposed to make you feel like, holy shit.
Yeah, this is disgusting sometimes. But, here, it's there are some scenes where, especially in the beginning where Akihata is just, walking, you know, with, the red elk.
Yep.
And they're just so beautiful and calm.
I mean, I think it's done that way to make you, feel like nature. It should be preserved or...
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I could just watch some of those things on loop for hours. There's some of them, with the music and everything.
Yep.
Some parts of it are just
the scene
calm.
Where he's riding through the forest, the beginning when he's riding through the forest with that music.
Yeah.
Gave me real Lord of the Rings vibes.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, that's the thing with this movie. It visually alone, it does a great job of, making the world feel rugged and lived in. From the opening scene with the demon boar, the world automatically feels like dense. It feels like a fantasy world. It doesn't ever feel like it's like trying to make like world build, but it just is. You know, the world isn't like giving you exposition and shit. It just is this way.
Yeah.
And you kind of can really lean into that. It just feels so great just looking at it and being you feel like you can walk into the screen sometimes. It feels so dense. I really enjoy that. And at the same time, those moments of like of supreme like calmness of like seeing birds flying overhead or seeing like somebody like walking across a river or something, it can be really juxtaposed by extreme violence.
Yep.
Like I think this is the most violent Ghibli film I've seen. It probably is the most violent Ghibli film out there.
I've only seen decapitations.
Yeah, I can honestly say I've never seen any other Ghibli film where someone was decapitated
by a stone arrowhead.
Probably important.
Probably not.
I don't know enough.
I don't think it makes a difference.
All I know
you can't take somebody's head off with a fucking arrow.
I know, that's the main point I was trying to make.
All I'm saying is that they made a point to say that he uses stone arrowheads.
Chris, an arrow.
How big are you?
Arrowheads like this big.
Look,
this big.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he has like superhuman strength on the arm.
That doesn't make that bigger.
But dude, it makes a hole through your throat. That's it.
Yeah, yeah, not I mean, take no, it off.
It doesn't
yes.
take it off.
Realistically.
Granted,
yes.
We're arguing schematics over a
schematics.
Movie with a fucking
semantics.
Sorry, same shit, bro. Hey, don't make fun of me for saying shit wrong. you can't be the one to
take the shots that I can get.
Tyler can make fun of me for it if you wanted
Tyler,
to.
Tyler, make fun of Faisal for it.
I already did. You said you're looking at the... Yeah, I got nothing else besides that one bit.
It's not a dense bit to make fun of.
Pointless details.
The arrow taking somebody's head off when there's a fucking giant boar, you know, like, possessed by a demon.
Or a decapitated head of a wolf that bites a woman's arm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. But yeah, like, the violence in his movie can be, like, shocking at times. Like, it's just sudden and extreme and really visceral.
Well, yeah, the first time he lets the arrows go and his heads and arms start flying off.
Heads and arms flying. I mean, even before that, like,
yeah,
after
no,
the
you just
boar
see
dies.
A guy, no, one, okay, this the carcass of the dead boy. Yeah.
That was a terrifying scene.
That's a pretty grotesque scene. I should say one quick thing. This movie gave me reoccurring nightmares as a child.
Yeah, take two for that.
So we can just lump that together with everything else we've seen that's already traumatized
Scooby-Doo and Princess Mononoke.
Hey, and the poster for Friday the 13th. Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, that makes more sense. The poster for Friday the 13th
is just
a
silhouette.
Yeah.
No, I've been deeply traumatized repeatedly. but no, like, the aesthetic of the demon boar, especially there's a scene where Mononoke falls into the demon boar, and it's almost like this endless sea of black tendrils that just kind of consume you and
horrifying.
You just float in. Terrifying aesthetic for a seven-year-old who took this from the library to have to see. Absolutely fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
The movie terrified the shit out of me. I don't think I could ever look at a boar in the eyes again. I mean, like, there's some of the imagery in this movie is very intense.
Oh, yeah.
It's great, though. Truly. Which means, I guess we can talk a bit about the climax of the movie, which is a lot of things happening in tandem.
What, when they eventually kill the forest god?
The forest god. Joji and Lady Eboshi lead a task.
Joji?
They lead, huh?
Is that Joji again?
Jijo?
It's not Filthy Frank.
Yeah, you were just making fun of me for fucking up a word. You fucked this guy's name up three times already.
I fuck up everyone's name. Remember
True.
Dr. whatever his name from Halloween?
You remember the time
Loomis,
where you like
Loomis,
like,
whatever the hell you said it was?
Yeah, Loomis.
His name is Loomis.
Know.
You said Louie like four times.
I mean, you still get all of our names wrong. Which
yeah.
Is
you don't know
I'm,
my
I'm,
name.
I'm...
I think he's I'm laughing because like, he literally doesn't.
Yeah, he's my... laughing because he's like, ha, funny joke, but it's true.
I mean, in my phone, you're still literally named Moses, so.
Yeah, two jokes today, all right.
I've known you long enough that I don't know your name, but long enough that I'm allowed to make these jokes. That's
not
law.
How it pans
that's
out.
That's the law.
That's not how, no.
It's fine. But.
What's his name?
Him?
The character you're talking about.
Jijo.
Oh, God.
Jijo, right? Come on. Give it to me. Am I right?
You know this movie more than us.
Yeah,
that is,
but.
That is his name. Don't worry.
Got it. First try.
Fuck that.
Seventh try.
Anyway, Jijo. Begins working with Lady Eboshi to kill the spirit god of the forest and to take his head so he can take it to the emperor. So while that's happening, a army of boars leads an attack on Lady Eboshi and Jijo's forces.
Do you have to think about it?
I actually said the beginning of the wrong name. And it's a really just intense battle where Keith David's plays the leader of the boars, and he does it really fucking well. the Boruto Tome is fucking like super well done in this. Super
well voice acting. His casting was great.
I feel like Keith Davis doesn't get to do enough.
I mean, now he's in Rick. No, he was.
He wasn't
no,
Rick and Morty. He was a president. Right?
Yeah, I'm trying to think if he's anything.
Yeah,
after
I want to see him in some more meaty roles because he was in Community. He was in Community.
He
for
was in
a
Community.
Season.
He's in The Thing.
He's in The Thing, the original one, or
yeah,
really?
When you there when we watched it?
I would not watch The Thing yet.
Oh, then yeah, he's in it.
Oh, okay, cool. That's good. I want to see him in more meaty roles. Like I really liked him as Otome here. I would really want to see him in just. I'm probably butchering that name too. I'd really want to see him in just more shit. That's the
at least you're getting it right though, right?
I don't know. I might not.
You
be.
May be butchering the pronunciation.
Yeah,
but
you're close.
I'm close.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll take close. I'll take close.
Who is what? Keith David's character. The
yeah the white boar.
What do you call it?
Otome.
Akoto.
Akotome?
There's no me. Oh, okay. Yeah, there's no me.
Okay. Can you spell it to me?
The full one is Okoto Nushi.
Okay. Can you spell the first one to me.
Okokoto.
Okoto.
Okoto?
No, but there's two batches of O's, right? It's like O-K-K-O, O-K-K-O?
No, I was no. just...
O-K-K-O.
Oh, Tyler, god damn it. Okoto. Okay, Okoto.
Yeah, Okoto.
Okoto's fucking great in this. Keith Davis should get more work more often. But basically, yeah, they have that conflict, and at the end of it, Lady Eboshi is able to decapitate the head of the forest god, and she gives it to...
To Jijo.
Jijo.
Yeah.
Jijo.
No, he's...
I forgot the name again.
I know.
He doesn't get it, right?
He
steals it, right?
Well, it's not... Like,
the intent was always to give it to him.
Because she just wanted to kill him.
She just wanted to kill him to get
him
arm.
She has no part of the head.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So she was like giving it to him because he was supplying the army for this to be done with. So yeah, that happens. The forest god basically becomes like a god of death because he's a god of life and death.
Yeah.
Right? And then without his head, he becomes searching for his head and pretty much killing everything.
Well, they said at night he becomes that anyway, doesn't he?
He becomes the Night Stalker, but I don't necessarily think that means he's the god of death at that point.
Oh, okay, then.
Maybe. I could be wrong, but I don't believe that's the case. But he becomes a proper god of death, annihilating pretty much everything in his path as he tries to get his head back. Eventually, he does get his head back. Jijo is required to give it back to him.
Jigo?
It's Jigo, but I don't know if they pronounce it.
I think it's with the J. I think it's Jijo.
Yeah.
Jijo ultimately has to give the head back to the forest god. And then the forest spirit dies, but he brings life back to the forest and to the valley. And at the end of the movie, we see Lady Eboshi saying how, you know, she's going to make a better village. She's going to do better with it. Mononoke says that she has to live in the forest. She can't live with man. Akihata, I think that was close enough.
Ashitaka
decides he's going to stay with the Iron Village to help them rebuild. And the movie ends on a kind of happy note in that, you know, things are going to be, they're going to try to do better. And that's basically the note that the movie ends on. They're going to, even though the forest spirit is, the forest spirit dies, but like Ashitaka says that he's not really dead. He's with us. He's life, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're going to just try and do better by the world around them is the ending of the movie. Because it is ultimately like an environmentalism movie, but it's a good one. It's an environmentalism movie done really, really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks fucking good while doing it.
Very good. What do you guys think of the romance in this movie?
It wasn't as pronounced as you would expect it to be, so I like that aspect because it wasn't about...
It wasn't about the romance.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't about
that. That's what I liked about it, too.
Yeah.
And the fact that they just didn't, like, fall in love and stay together.
Yeah.
No.
I didn't think
it felt
a bit...
There's a mutual respect at the
end. There's a respect, but, like, it is a bit quick. Like, in the dub, at least, there was a lot of scenes where there's... Well, you watched the dub, right, Tyler?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, there was a couple scenes where, like, oh, the woman he loves or the man he loves, stuff like that. It's
they
like,
do
okay.
kind of push it in a little quick. It's like oh, you saved her, and then that makes love happen.
And
it's
I like how in the beginning he gets an arrowhead or, like, a knife head or something from his sister, a crystal knife head, and he's like, I can't take this.
Oh, yeah.
And the moment he meets Mononoke, he's like, take it.
Take it,
please.
Please, have it. I don't need this anymore.
Pretty gift, shiny gift. For the
I
lady.
My sister gave it to me before I left.
Oh, please, it's ugly.
She's a terrible sculptor. It looks like shit.
The whole movie is really Ashikata just learning to accept that he doesn't like his sister.
No, yeah.
That's the true through line of the movie. I mean, no, the through line of the movie is hate. Hate turns the people into demons. Hate convinces people to fight against each other like this. Hate destroys the world. That's the through line of the movie. And also to just give away your sister's shit. That's also basically, yeah. Movie.
Please, look, it's terrible. Look at the crafting on this.
No, she Mononoke loved it. But then again, Mononoke has never seen... She said it's pretty. She said
she
it,
grew up with
pretty.
Wolves.
I mean, her baseline was obviously very low. Her expectations...
Like, this looks better than a wolf tooth.
Yeah.
Her expectations are all the way into the ground. But yeah, I very much enjoy this movie.
So did I.
Yeah. They're all really enjoy...
They're all very.
They're all considered to be some of the best stuff out there. Yeah. Especially, you know, I'm in the beginning for the cold open. I mentioned the Renaissance Disney movies.
Yeah,
this shit's coming out around the same time as Little Mermaid, you know, Mulan and Lion King. Those movies aren't bad.
No.
You know, by any definition. But they're definitely not this.
No, definitely not.
These are incomparable to see what like Eastern and Western animation were doing at the exact same time.
Mm.
Yep,
it's fucking crazy. And on that note, yeah, anything else you want to say about Princess Mononoke?
Or any of the movies?
I think I'm good.
Yeah? Tyler?
For Princess Mononoke? No, I got one thing I forgot for Perfect Blue.
Okay.
What's up?
The music in the movie reminds me a lot of Nine Inch Nails, and that really works. What?
Nine Inch Nails, really? Maybe I'm forgetting the music from... I'm either forgetting about Nine Inch Nails or Princess Mononoke. I mean, or Perfect Blue.
The scenes where, like, she's staring at the screen... when she's looking through the fan mail, or whatever you want to call that homepage.
Okay, I'm probably
there's
forgetting.
There's a sound that
both.
Sounds
yeah,
very...
Yeah, I think I'm
forgetting
this.
There's scene. A sound that's very industrial, okay. And it just keeps repeating until it gets louder and louder, and then it cuts away.
Okay, I now see what you mean by Nine Inch Nails. The
yeah.
Industrial... Okay, that makes more sense. Now I understand what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about...
Closer?
Huh?
Or Hurt?
Hurt. I was thinking about Hurt. Well, I was also thinking about Closer and Hurt, but I was thinking about both of them.
Mm.
And neither of them fit that aesthetic at all.
Well, no, because Closer is the most... I've only heard the one album by them, but still.
It's like their most derivative, I guess, is what you're saying? Or
oh, no, it's not derivative.
Oh, no.
I mean, it's the most accessible because it's a very... It's not as industrial. I mean, it's industrial, like, song still, but, I mean, you can play that song and you'd be like, oh, okay, I can enjoy this compared to the something like... I forgot what the song name is. I think it's like March of a Gun or something where he just yells, God is dead 50 times. So it's like...
Sounds great.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the first thing that came to my mind was Hurt, which obviously did not...
Yeah, no, that's...
I mean, yeah. Yeah, so that didn't fit here. So I was very confused, but okay. That makes a lot more sense now, the industrialness of it. Now I can understand that. That's an interesting point to make.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think the music's done very well there, too. It's just very tense.
I think music in all the films are done.
I mean, again,
there's
no
bad
things in these movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all good. They're all great fucking films. Which is going to make
ranking
them
pretty
hard.
Hard.
So I say we start with that. Three?
I think I got to go Akira.
Yeah, I probably was going to go to Akira.
Not because it was a bad movie.
It's just
I just think the
cold.
Other two are better.
It's just so cold and you don't connect to them. Like if it's on anything and I'll like walk in, I'll watch it maybe for a little bit, maybe the whole thing. But at the same time, I don't think I'm ever going to be like, well, granted, I don't think I want to watch Perfect Blue again.
I would.
Yeah.
I
think
I mean,
I would watch
Perfect Blue more than Akira, but at the same time, you got to be in the mood to let's watch this.
Let's watch something horribly fucked up.
Yeah.
I do agree that Akira is my third. I do think that like it's a movie that gets better when you think about it.
Yeah.
But
on like if you're just watching it on first watch, like
yeah, it's a bit dense.
It's
yeah.
hard
yeah.
to it's hard to like watch it because you already know. Like if you know about Akira, it's like oh, it's supposed to be this amazing influential movie. It's like. It is, and at the same time, you're not going to get that feeling back from it, I don't think.
Yeah. I guess it's almost overhyped by its own existence.
Yeah, I
yeah.
think so.
That's an interesting way to put it, yeah.
It's like watching The Godfather now, if you've never seen it.
Yeah. I mean, I still like The Godfather.
Well, not, again, it's not to say that either The Godfather or this are bad
but
or
they just
not
don't
good.
Live up to that.
It's just the greatest movie ever.
It's
like, it's yeah,
impossible
it's great.
To live
yeah.
up to
the being
the
best
the hype.
Film.
Yeah,
yeah,
all these films have yeah. being classics.
Yeah.
All right. Two?
No, that's hard.
That's hard,
this
right?
is hard. You go first, Chris.
Me?
Yeah. I went first last time. You got to go first now.
Fuck. All right. First, I'm going to put Perfect Blue. I love Perfect Blue.
Did you say first?
No, I'm still... Oh, Jesus Christ, no. Second.
That's,
second,
yeah,
I'm putting
say,
Perfect
that's not
Blue.
The right wording.
I am very tired. Second, I am putting Perfect Blue.
As I my, think I agree with that.
It's a hard
It's
fight.
A hard one, too. It's like a 50-50.
It really is difficult. I think that a lot of Mononoke for me ends up... I have, like, you know, nostalgia for my childhood traumas. That's really helping it here.
Sure.
But I think that ultimately, yeah, I think Perfect Blue just goes second. I think it comes down to pure enjoyment here, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think Perfect Blue is kind of like, I might even say the better piece of film, like as terms of like sheer directing and like, and all those things that make a movie to movie. I might say Perfect Blue might be the better piece of art here. Or no, I wouldn't say that.
It's hard.
It's very,
it's really
like,
hard.
I, I think I enjoyed watching Perfect Blue the most because I had a more fun time trying to piece everything together. Compared to, like, the other two are more straightforward. You don't really have to think that much as to what the hell's going on.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's true.
So Perfect Blue was more fun in that aspect. But
I think both of those other movies, aside from Perfect Blue, are more like feel, don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Compared to Perfect Blue, which is like, no, think.
Think hard.
I was gonna put Perfect Blue first because I enjoyed it the most out of it. But the more I think about Mononoke, I feel like I'm gonna love that more. The more I go back toward it.
It is. Yeah, a
I think
movie that feels
Mononoke has that rewatchability too.
It does.
Yeah.
It feels epic and grand, like Lord of the Rings, like you said. Yeah. So it is easy to just put back on.
So we're really just doing the same three follows.
I can't believe it. I really thought this was gonna be the one where we were all over the place.
Well, we all agreed on Akira. Yeah.
Well, I guess I thought that even because, like, you know, I knew that when we came in, but like. Thinking about it yesterday, because I finished both movies yesterday, Perfect Blue and Mononoke. I finished them last night, so I was thinking, okay, this is probably going to be a messy list. But it's surprising that, you know, we're all actually...
Well, I mean, for the most part, Akira is going to be the last on all of us because it's just so distant.
Yeah, that's true.
It's just the problem with Perfect Blue, not problem, but like how to compare Perfect Blue to Princess Mononoke is, and it basically comes down to which one I would watch again.
I guess that is a way to look at it.
Yeah.
But even then, I think, I would obviously watch both again if I had to pick Mononoke just because Perfect Blue is a tough watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
Also, personally for me, I prefer watching more of like the fantasy type movies, especially when it comes to anime movies.
Yeah.
I think that's why it gets one for me.
But then the problem for me is that if you ask me about something like, would you watch Lord of the Rings or, I mean, I can't pick Box One because I haven't seen it, or like Prisoners, I would watch Prisoners again. And that's another thriller.
Yeah, see, different for me, though. I'd watch Lord of the Rings.
I've not seen Prisoners, but I probably would also watch Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I do think you can get away with a lot more in animation and fantasy.
Yeah.
You can just make more happen. Like, Satoshi Kon intentionally tried to make things feel subdued, which he does really well, but you can just get away with so much more interesting visuals from Mononoke.
Mm.
So I guess that puts down number one, Mononoke.
For everybody?
Yeah.
Mononoke across
number
the board.
Number one,
wow,
Mononoke.
We have peace.
Number two, Perfect Blue. Number three, Akira.
And that's the binge.
That's the binge.
God damn. These are good movies. I don't know if I said it in the episode, but I said it outside of it, that this is probably, like, between everything we've watched, this is the day that had, like, the best three individual pieces.
Yeah, I think so.
Every
piece held up to each other.
Yeah.
Like, really well.
They're all very, very good.
It's not like every other one. Well, I mean, the second one closest to this would be, I think, the first episode we had did.
Yeah. But even
all
then,
those
the boys, were great. The Boys was, like, an obviously far away one.
I mean, here, I guess Akira was technically the obviously far away
but
one.
But I don't feel like the,
it didn't
the
feel like
it,
that
it was only far away because of.
We didn't really connect to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't feel like it was as distant as, like, The Boys was to Doom Patrol and Watchmen.
Yeah.
But even
it still had a lot. That was our
second best in terms of quality around the board, I mean.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
Yeah. Because every other one had one obvious one that wasn't as good.
Yeah, everything else had at least one shitter in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's fair.
I mean, even Lovecraft was kind of even though the evenness of that one was.
I feel like Scooby-Doo ran away with it in the end.
I think so too.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like, if you want to actually rank this, it'll be like this episode, Comic Habitations, and Lovecraft, because College obviously had The Roommate, and that's the worst thing we've seen out of any of this.
That was the worst movie of all fucking
time.
That
is not a good film.
All right.
What do we have planned for next week, Tyler? Let's let them know.
Is it mockumentary? Yes.
Very nice.
Next week is very nice.
Very nice. That's right. We're talking about Borat 1 and 2, as well as a couple other things. You guys will get to see that next week. Thank you guys for joining with us tonight here.
Thank you for listening.
This morning.
What?
You don't know what time it is.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
We'll see you next week.
See you guys.
See you.